Welcome to PaintEd. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, visit pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all of you non-members out there, sign up for a free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the App Store and Google Play. This episode is brought to you by Bear and Federated Insurance.
Hello and welcome to Mastermind. Our mission is to build million-dollar businesses so that we can have financial freedom, time for our families, and make an impact in our communities. Let's kick it off with some big wins. Alex, lead the way.
This week, we had a big win. We did our first out-of-state job with our new team and it went awesome. We hit all our numbers and it was great. We found some more contacts in the area we were working. There's not a lot of contractors out there, so it's a great open market. So that was a huge win this week.
Yes, right on. That's awesome. Glad to hear that. Thank you. Asa, big wins.
Broke the job dry spell last week. Got a small job off of Thumbtack, so that was good. Just looking for the next one.
Okay, right on. Yep, keep it going. And Ryan, glad to see you back. Hopefully you're feeling better.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Big wins for me. I had just the $84,000 January. It's the biggest January I've had so far ever. So that was pretty encouraging.
Well done. That's $1 million a month. All I have to do is do that 11 more times.
Yeah.
Okay. Way to go. Well done. That's awesome. Alex Garcia. Big wins, buddy.
How you doing, all? Last week I used Wordfound and Google. So I guess reviews are paying off. I got a call from a client that it's non-referral, all from Google. I feel like I did a great job on the phone conversation. Mm-hmm. And I met the customer on Friday and I was able to close the job. It's a small job, but I feel very happy for the accomplishment of being fine on Google and closed on the spot.
Thank awesome. Yeah, closed on the spot. Doesn't get much better than that. Well done. All right, Josh.
Yeah, big win. Bill had some consistency with what I've been selling. We've been selling about 10 to 15 grand every week, which has been great. And recently, having had three or four jobs that had just finished up around the same time. It's always nice whenever you just go from like final walkthrough to final walkthrough, just pick up a bunch of checks. That was a big win.
That's a good day when that happens. Indeed. Right on. Great job, Josh. Thank you. All right. What is the one thing that we can brainstorm for you such that might make everything else easier and or unnecessary? Alex Bowman, lead the way.
All right. Basically, I wanted to start giving back to my community in a few different areas. So I want to get ideas where you guys focus that has the greatest impact on the community itself positively, and not only in large cities, because I work in a lot of small rural towns. So just different ideas you guys would have where you would go to work and give back to your community.
Okay, giving back to your community. That's awesome. First, a principle that I learned in Rabbi LePin, Daniel LePin's book, Thou Shall Prosper. He said, when considering giving back, what did you take from the community? Meaning, what did we take without permission, without trading? And the answer is nothing. We're in the trades, we're trading services, value for money. So he says that giving back came from Hollywood, and he encourages, he's no, it's great to give, but we have nothing to give back because we didn't take anything to begin with. And so just a little principle there, I thought he's right, because we have to reprogram a lot of our money woes and ideals that we learn from unlearn them from TV. So in the spirit of giving, yeah, absolutely. Giving to our community, how and what can we do to give to our community? Paint It Forward 2.0, love that one. iClass, that was a huge one for us, made it in the paper a bunch of times, and I've got the whole thing laid out. Community Spotlights, your business network will love you for that, and your customers love you for that too, because you're giving value to them, right? And then there's the Paintball Charity Championship. That's tons of fun. The team loves it. It's great for culture, and your local charities win. Everybody wins. So those are my four favorite off the top of my head. Yeah. But who else? Go ahead.
I haven't done it yet, but I have it in my heart to eventually sometime in the future have a designated like one or two man crew that just goes around and just full time and has like touches up areas. This might be like too big of a, not too big, but a long-term thing, but like a designated crew that does touch up in tagged areas or lower areas that need refreshing. And they just have their main common 10 to 15 colors on stock. And they just have a generator and like a gas powered sprayer or something. I haven't really fully thought it all out, but just something where it's, you know, can just bring new life and, you know, to the community in that area. But I live in Southern California where it's, you know, 20 minute drive. You have, you know, a million miles of just tagging and lower end areas. I'm not sure. I forget where you live, but that just came to my mind.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, we're actually based out of North Salt Lake City, Utah. So we do have that a lot in the local community here. So that's a great idea. We could add to that. And we work both in the large city and very rural areas. So no, that's an awesome idea. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you, Ryan. Anybody else? Okay. Of those, Alex, which one do you think you'd be inclined to consider?
We are doing a Paint It Forward project coming up next week. So that's something that we're already into. I'd like to look into all those. I think they're all great ideas. I like the point you make, maybe not give back, but give forward. That's, yeah, and just give. And so that's what I'm going to look at there. But I do, I saw it was Jesus the other day did a community corners, there's community spotlight. And I saw that and I thought that was an excellent idea too. So that's something I want to focus on because I used to run a cookie contest where I featured local businesses and we would be promoting their products and stuff like that. So I do like to help promote local business. I'm a local business. I've struggled for a long time and any help I could ever get, I appreciate. So things like that I work on there. So I think those would all be great ideas.
You can get the details of doing community spotlights in the cafe. Got it all laid out there for you.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Right on. My pleasure. Ace, what's one thing we could brainstorm for you such that make everything else easier and or unnecessary?
No, I think I still have the same thing as the last 2 weeks. My sales process still stinks. I did watch the cafe videos. I think my estimates are further between, so I think I forget what I've watched between the estimates and then I don't end up doing it. But yeah, I'm just thinking about adjusting prices, adjusting my sales process, because it's just been getting killed on price a lot lately.
Okay. So coaching opportunity here. If you recall, and I believe I went over this in sales, but there's a lot there to remember. If we lose on price, what that means is if we take the above the line approach, if we take full ownership, even if it's not our fault, but we take full ownership anyway, when we take full ownership, even if it's not our fault, now we have the power to do something about it, right? So that's the principle of above the line. When we hear or we believe that we lose to price, the ownership perspective is I did not communicate enough value. I did not communicate our value. Instead, I competed on price. So we have an option. We can compete on price and be a commodity, or we can compete on value and make a profit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. I like the approach.
I'm sorry?
No, I like the ownership concept.
Mm-hmm. So every time you hear or you believe that you lost on price, check yourself. Just say, whoa, wait a minute. Okay. I did not communicate enough value. And now with the other principle is how can I? We never drop C-bombs, right? Like I can't get to Mars. Elon's proven that wrong. He's going to figure it out, right? How can I? So instead, it's okay. I don't know how to communicate more value. How can I communicate more value? Because when we ask how, it gets our brain working, our subconscious working. But if we ever drop a C-bomb and say, I can't, our subconscious stops working. It says, oh, all right, I'm not going to work on that problem for you. How can we?
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it. I'm trying to figure out differentiators and how to communicate value, because I think it's just been hard for me. Not having a painting background to cast strong differentiators from other folks.
Your background is in tech, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have any customer experience?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's just customer service. It's just, that's all it is. They just want to know that you're going to provide the best experience. They just want to know that they can trust you and that you're going to provide the best experience. The technical side of painting, it's not much. The other side of it is they need to feel confident in you. And part of that is to make sure that you show up with confidence, genuine confidence, not faked or puffed up. But we can't be insecure and we can't have fake confidence. So you need a real confidence showing up knowing that your team provides the best experience. Another component that's going to help you is, do you believe that there are companies out there, contractors out there, who don't do what they say they're going to do? Are there shady contractors out there?
Oh, for sure.
There are. So if that's true and you care about your customers, don't you have a moral obligation to help them to see that you are the best value to protect them from those other guys?
Yeah.
Okay. That puts this in a whole new light, right? So when you show up, it's not about, I hope I get the job so I can make a sale. But now it goes to a whole nother level that you have a moral obligation to help them to see that you are the best value to protect them from shady contractors.
Yeah. It's, I like that perspective.
Thank you. Other thoughts, guys? Oh, I'm sorry. You said, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just writing notes if you hear me clacking.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I just want to chime in a little bit. I can on this one. Based on my experience from the last salt, I think most important is to knowing your numbers. So that way you can present with confidence. On my experience with this project that I sold, I didn't know the person. They didn't know me. They only were based on the reviews. But I was able to provide a ballpark price based on their needs. Like, we're going to be painting walls, ceilings, that's it, no trim. But I always make it clear that when I show up there to see what exactly the condition of the place is, if we need to repair holes or do something else. I think that gives confidence to the customer, because she gets back to me after my follow-ups. And she says, we have another price lower than you, but we rather go with you. So that's when I set up that in-person estimate. And when I show up to the estimate, I was able to close. I give her like $100 help on the pricing, because her budget, she's renting and another rental, and their budget is very low. So I was like, okay, I can help you with that. I just came with that because I feel good that she trusts me and I'm going to be closing the job on the spot. So $100 won't kill me. But yeah, I think it's all confidence, knowing your numbers, and that'll give you the confidence to present, and the customer will perceive that.
Awesome. Thank you, Alex. Very important. Know your numbers. Yeah. It comes back to confidence. Go ahead, Ryan.
I was just thinking, like, on price, how do you know when your price is just too high? Because, and I guess that's subjective, and but like, where's the line of, hey, they're getting three or four estimates, you know, 10, everybody else is 5 to 7.5, but it's, I don't know what I'm exactly trying to ask, but where, when it, like, it's okay if you do provide the best quality, best experience, and XYZ, so you're totally able to and worthy of charging that much. But I guess just, I don't know, my question.
That's good. Okay. No, this is good. I'll jump in. So if you, how do you know when you're charging too much? So the market will tell you. It has nothing to do with your competitors. Most of your competitors don't know their numbers, so don't go by theirs. Okay. Your market will tell you, and they'll tell you by how far your calendar is booked out. So if you're booked out 6+ weeks, you might not be charging enough. Even if you're at the top, it doesn't matter. The market decides your value, right? According to the value you provide, they tell you what your value is worth, right? Now, a part of that is, I know my worth, but they'll also say they either agree with you or they don't. Okay. So if you're booked out 2 months and you're still the most expensive, you're not charging enough. It has nothing to do with your competitors, again, because most of them don't know their numbers. Most of them don't know their numbers, and they're competing on price. And that when they compete on price, what do? It's a downward spiral. And then it's just them in a 30-year-old van for 30 years grinding it out and wondering why they never made any money, because they were constantly competing on price. Now, your price might be too high when, if we have a decent lead flow, but we're only booked out a week, then it's okay. Maybe I need to bring this in a little bit. All right. Now, ideally, you want to use my hourly sell rate calculator to make sure that you're within your range, which depends on, right, your overhead, your expenses, how many employees you have, average hours a week, and puts all that math together for you to say, okay, I need to be within this range. Mm-hmm. So that way you have your ballpark for you and your company, but essentially your calendar decides when you're too high or when you're not charging enough.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. ASA, was this all helpful? Oh, go ahead.
I have to agree with Steve on both the points for both ASA and Ryan. As far as that goes, I do cabins. We're extremely high priced. Our bids are between $30,000 and $70,000 to refinish cabins. And I had one where I went bid the other day. It was $42,000 and the other guy was $8,000. The materials were $6,000 for the cabin. And I was the one who sold that job. So I just want you to know that I was almost $34,000 over the lowest guy, or the next guy down, and still sold the price. It did take me 2 months of negotiations, but I showed him why I was the one he should choose to go with and why our product would be superior to the other. So as far as charging too much, I asked myself, am I laughing at my customer? That's how I know I'm charging too much. Do I laugh about what I'm charging them and I'm robbing them? That's when we're charging too much. That would be my point. And to ACE, as far as the values and stuff go, I would say you got to look at it from the customer's point of view. When they call a paint company, they're calling a paint company. They're not calling because, oh, this paint company is this or this is this. They just call a paint company. And what they're looking for is someone who's going to be higher value. When they look in the phone book, it's like us opening the phone book to call a tile guy. And they're all tile guys. The only thing that's going to separate them is who they are. First off, you have to present yourself, because in order for someone to trust you, you have to show them you, not just your company, not just what everyone else is going to do. The skills of your painting, truly, I don't believe matter when it comes to making a sale. It is all the customer experience. What are you going to offer them? What are they going to receive? How are they going to be happy with their product? Do they get a warranty? All these things are what's going to differentiate that. Whether your guys can cut the finest line in the world or not, I've come to find out, really doesn't matter. I can sell it either way, whether I'm doing the job or I have other guys doing the job. So really focus on who you are. Show them who you are. What do you do? What are the achievements that you've had in your community, your life, things of that nature that you can show them separates you from the other guys? I mentioned on a few podcasts ago that there's a actual podcast further back for the DYB system that talks about the skateboarding dentist. So I highly recommend, if you have not listened to that podcast, you guys go listen to the skateboarding dentist. So I just wanted to share those things.
That's an awesome example, man. That's an inspiration for sure.
Awesome.
Selling the job at that price.
You got to do it right. And if you're doing a very dishonest service, if you're not providing the correct price, that's how I look at it. And these guys that are saying $8,000, they're going to either tack on a whole bunch of money at the end, and that's going to be a horrible customer experience, or they're going to do it completely wrong and I'll be there fixing it, and they're going to have to pay $60,000 to $70,000. So you got to charge them right. You got to do it right. I've done the cabins at $12,000 and I lost hardcore. So it's really important that you know your numbers. And a lot of times your numbers are a lot higher than anybody else's, because, again, they do not know their numbers. They're guessing and they're going to lose. So do not follow other people's numbers. That's my advice.
Winner chicken dinner. Now, Alex, I don't know if you noticed, but you should have seen Asa's jaw drop and his smile go from ear to ear when he heard you open into that story. I think you provided a ton of hope from that example. So thank you. That was awesome.
Yeah, no more excuses about losing over $1,500 now.
No, not at all.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, way to be, Alex. Thank you. Let's see, Ryan.
Let's see, schedule and pricing. We're working on Monday. I'd say pricing right now. Also, I either price it like a little bit above what I think. I price it a teeny bit higher than I feel comfortable and I land those, or I price it the same way and I don't get those. And then when I follow up, they usually say that the price was too high or you were nearly double. But the ones that I have been getting are referrals, are not ones, leads from just random, but I guess it comes down to the quality of the lead or where they come from. And we're coming up on 75 reviews, 5-star reviews.
Let me jump in. Lead sources are critical, very important, very important. This is why we're a huge component for networking. Okay, five of the system, ABCs of sales, always be connecting. And so when you're networking, you're generating trust leads. When people vouch for somebody, if you ask your neighbor, you ask a friend, hey, I need a mechanic, a roofer, a plumber, and they say, oh, go to Joe. Joe's great. Do you even question them about it? You're just like, thank you. And you just go to Joe and Joe does a great job because they vouch for him. Instant trust. You didn't even call anybody else. This is why referrals are so important, so valuable, versus paying for leads, paying for ads, and even Google leads. So even Google leads are tough. Those are cold leads because everybody else has a million reviews and not everybody differentiates himself online. Now, if you have your website built out according to the website conversion funnel, that'll be helpful. But a lot of them don't go to the website. They just call the number on Google. And again, you look like the other two on there. So those are still cold leads, and cold leads aren't going to convert as well. But referrals, like you're saying, you get to charge a little bit more than what you normally do. No problem. You're in like Flynn. So the question is, how can you generate more referrals? Right? How can you generate more referrals? And that's networking. Staying top of mind to your customers. Step 9, staying top of mind to your customers. 2 phone calls a day. Newsletter, email newsletter of value, not discounts and deals and higher res, but of value once a month. And then a send out card every quarter. And then connect with all your customers on social, because that's a free and easy way to stay top of mind. And then run those gourmet cookie contests on Facebook every week. Those are tons of fun. Everybody loves them. Right. So that networking, and the question is, how can you generate more referrals? Because that's instant trust. It's a little bit slower of a flywheel to get going, but once you get that flywheel going, it's on its way. It just takes care of itself.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
I was talking to another painter, and he said something that was really fitting to me. And he said, do your sales process and your marketing in light of getting the first referral and the second repeat business. And so once I started thinking about that, it's how can I get them to go with us for interior work if we painted their outside, and how can I incentivize them to get me one referral? And looking at it like that, I'm like, oh man, there's so much stuff I need to do or add. And yeah, that can help that flywheel.
Mm-hmm. And part of that is just staying top of mind. They already know you, like you, and trust you. But we let them forget about us. We let them forget about us. So here's a story I'm going to share. Well, back when Florida, when I was getting going, and this is before I hit the wife lottery in mid-April, it was just myself and then my older children, Stephen and Nadia, who were, I think, like 7 and 9 at the time, or 6 and 8 or something like that. Stephen was in soccer. And so I would take him to soccer, and we met another family who had just moved down from Tennessee. And they invited us over for some grilled chicken for a cookout. Being a single dad, you don't say no to any meal ever. Okay. Especially cookout, some grilled chicken, some from Tennessee. I was like, yeah, oh yeah, we'll be there. So we got there, we met with them, nice people. And we're sitting, getting to know each other outside around the pool, waiting for the grill. And I says, what do you do? I said, I'm a painting contractor. And he says, oh, we just had our house painted. And I looked around, and I said, they did a nice job. It did. It looked great. And I said, I'm just curious, who did that? Who did this? And he looked at his wife, I don't remember. I'm like, oh, it's probably been a while. He's like, no, it was just a couple months ago. A couple months ago, this blew my mind. I couldn't let it go, and I didn't let it go. And I pushed just as far as I could because I didn't feel like they were frustrated. I'm like, listen, this is, it's really important to me. Did they leave a magnet on the fridge? And he says, what's going on? Look, no magnet on the fridge. I said, can I pull out a phone book and we just go through these? Now, this has been 10, 15 years ago, the last of the phone books, right? So we did, went through all of them. Nothing jogged his memory. I say, maybe they left a paint can in the garage with their sticker on it. Nope. Zero. These guys were raving fans, and they had just had their house painted 2, maybe 3 months ago. There was nothing I could do to jog their memory. They will never receive a referral from these raving fans again. Stay top of mind. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. They'll never receive a referral from them. That's crazy to think about.
Raving fans. And they did a great job, guys. I know we can all pick each other. You did a great job. It looked sharp, nice, clean lines. Even, it was a fantastic job, and they had a great experience. They will never receive a referral from them, ever. Raving fans never get a referral from them. Stay top of mind. We get so busy getting new leads that we forget about our raving fans. All we have to do is stay top of mind. Okay. All right. Let's see. Alex Garcia, you're up.
Okay. This one, I think it's going to, I don't know, fall into culture, right? My only 2 employees that I have, I hire him like 3 years. We've been working like 3 years together. And I didn't bring him up with a handbook, like a manual, or anything that I can hold them accountable based on the document. So yesterday I was very, I think my level of stress was very high. After I talked to my wife, I came down, beautiful, amazing woman. But it's just, I have so much work. I've been working, the last 3 weeks I've been working on the field. I haven't been able to do many other tasks that it requires my attention, to prepare documents, to job casting, to all the responsibilities that we carry. I've been working on the field to keep up. And so the projects that I got thinking on them, we had on the last couple of weeks, we have a decent amount of rain in San Diego. And I got jobs that I, knowing that it's not our forte, but we do it. And sometimes we do a drywall. And I got a job from a couple customers that we have their house flooded. And so I talked to my drywaller because I have a drywaller, and we both agreed that the job is going to be for 3 to 4 days. If 3 days, if they do it. So I said, my guys will be at home for a couple weeks. Let's get into this project. So I got them into the project, and it's just taking longer. This is like the third job that I noticed that it's just taking longer. On Friday, I got the opportunity to work with them, and I feel like they are not performing at their full potential. I was yesterday just thinking, okay, you guys, you're making me lose so much money, and I'm just paying, working myself to be able to cover our overheads and expenses. So to me, it's not fair, but I just wish they can see my point of view. Okay, I'm doing this for you to be working. But of course, whatever I'm doing, only knowing myself. But yeah, if you guys can chime in on that one.
I just want to
to have a conversation with them and ownership of my failure, because all this happening because of me. But I'm willing and I'm to take this ahead. If how do I maybe approach them and say, hey guys, you want to jump in with me, or how could we do it, right? Or maybe just start from scratch and get them, let them go if they want to go, and just start hiring my helper and training the right way. Thank you.
Okay, so Alex, if I understand your question, how do we get underperforming painters to pick up the speed? So I would say three things. First is, one, we have to understand that nobody is ever going to work as hard or as fast as we do. In all fairness, they don't reap the rewards, the benefits that we do. So they don't have as much vested, nor do will they receive as much return. So that helps us to adjust our expectations some. Not that it has to go all the way to the level that they're underperforming at, but we can't expect them to be right where we are, okay, as far as production rates and our speed and our efficiencies. Okay. Second is to set goals for them. Okay. So in our jobs, we would always title them Smith Exterior 80. And they knew 80 was the goal. And sometimes it, I don't know, Jones Interior 40. Right. And so they would know the goal. And then the idea was to hit that. And so we need to, one, set goals for them. And then two, if we set goals for them, they're still not hitting them, then you talk to them. You just say, I have a problem that I need help with. I'm trying to build a business for us so that we have long-standing careers and we can all get raises and make more money for years on end. Is that what you want? Yes. Okay, great. So in order for us to do that, you have to hit your goals. If you don't, the company doesn't make any profit and the company won't grow and you won't make any more money. Can you help me with this? And see what their response is. If it's above the line, right, they take ownership, great, we can move forward. If not, we need to think about removing them from the team because it might just be a character issue.
And will you do this question, both of them at the same time, like in a general meeting, or it's in person, like individual?
So, yeah, good question. Anytime I'm trying to change the culture of the team or implement something new, I always start with the influencer. So there's always an influencer on the team who's not the owner that everybody looks up to for the nod or which direction we're going or what we should be doing. It's just human nature. It's funny. But in this situation, if it's just a couple guys for you guys, you might meet with them together and say, hey guys, who wants to get raises? Who wants to make more money? They're all going to be like, well, yeah, me, of course. Okay. So in order to do that, we have to hit goals. Now, first, I want to apologize for not setting goals if we weren't, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you guys what the hour goals are in these jobs. Okay. And if we hit them 3-6 months at a time, we can all get raises. If we don't, then it's just not going to work out because the company has to be profitable to grow. And I want this company to go really bad so we can all make some more money. Sound good? Great. Does that make sense?
It does. Great. Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome.
What do you do if they say your goals are a little unrealistic and we're trying our hardest, but we just don't have enough hours to complete the work and make it look as good as you expect it to be in the time that you gave us?
Yeah, that depends. That's going to depend on the context on the team. So first is, do you believe that? Do you believe what they're saying is true? And or do you have another team that's hitting all your goals? Then if that's true, then say Joe and Bob, they're crushing. So Joe and Bob are crushing it. Same estimates, right? But you guys are saying it's my fault, right? Which is bloodline. Okay. So it depends on if what they're saying is true or not. It's usually not. Sometimes we're a little too aggressive. Sometimes we're bidding and we're bidding at production rates that we do, right? So that was step one, is we need to readjust production rates to employee production rates rather than ours. Now, and then if they're not hitting them, or if they say they can, or it's not reliable, then either we need to adjust that if it's true. If it's not true, say then you need to replace them, especially if they don't believe they can do any better.
I was going to say, I was in the same boat a while ago. I started hand training all my employees. I've been hiring them at a younger age and teaching them all everything I know instead of hiring experienced painters. We did a drywall job just a little bit ago, and I learned a big lesson, actually two of them. Drywall takes a lot longer than you think, and it always does. And I was just behind drywallers, and it takes longer than this professional company does. So when we step outside of our normal specialty, we're going to run into some big problems there. We're going to have to learn a lesson. Until we do it 10, 20, 30 times and we learn all that, we won't be hitting our numbers. Number two, what I look at is, it's wintertime, your guys were working. I did the same thing. I just kept my company afloat. I ran two jobs about 3 weeks ago just to be able to pay my guys. And that's all we did. I didn't make a dime off anything, but I figured it's a lot less expensive than dipping into my profit to keep my employees. So in the wintertime, as long as they're making money and I'm not getting rid of them or having to lose my employees, that's one thing I really look at. The biggest thing that helped me was something Steve mentioned to me, was the after action review. And it's getting together with the team and talking about what worked, what didn't work, where were you finding your problems, what could we do to improve this? And then that's how you can speak with them about, hey, we're not hitting what we need. What can we do to correct this? And as a team, you're correcting it instead of pointing fingers. Hey, I noticed you guys aren't working hard enough, or I noticed you don't know enough. I noticed I didn't do this. It's a team effort. Hey, what can we do to improve upon this? Because I know that I can't expect this from you because you don't do drywall every day. It's wintertime, where at least we're working. What can we do to make this work for all of us? And that's how I look at that.
Spot on. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate that. All right, Josh, you're up.
One of the things I think I'd like to talk about is, as my time gets filled in with estimates and then trying to run jobs, if I'm getting close, I'm wondering at what point it makes sense to start looking to hire a project manager.
Good question. Okay. So if I hear you correctly, you're running around and things are very busy, wondering at what point we should hire a project manager. Are you using subs or employees?
Subs.
Okay. Subs, it's a 50-50 that you'll need a project manager. Employees, you do not. And really the key is hiring for character and making sure your tech stack is optimized. Because ideally, especially with employees, you go out, you network, you do sales, you close them on the spot, hopefully. And as soon as you hit accepted, the work order gets uploaded to Monday. It's in Monday for the crews. The crew leader, who takes ownership and is responsible, can grab it, see what needs to be done, and lead his crew to get the job done. With subs, sometimes it's a little more tricky. There are companies who can do this without a project manager. Most of them don't, though. Most of them do use a project manager. And what you want to think is, you want to get up. So project manager is going to cost you, depending on your market, anywhere between $50,000 and $70,000. And that comes directly out of your net profit. So take a look at your very bottom line and just say, am I willing to let go of $50,000, $70,000 a year? Or can I lead culture, Can I influence culture to get these guys to pull the work orders off of Monday and to encourage them to execute on their own with proficiency and efficiency, providing a remarkable experience? And keeping, if you can do that, your reward is you get to keep that $50,000 to $70,000 in your pocket, net profit. If not, you have to hopefully hire correctly, pay that $50,000, $70,000 a year, and hopefully it works out with the project manager. Hopefully he does everything else because he's another employee, right? He's somebody else you got to train, somebody else you got to manage. So my encouragement would be focus on culture if you can. Make sure your tech stack is optimized, right, and zapping. And see if you can crack this nut without hiring a project manager. Cool. Okay. Let's see here. We have a little more time left. Anybody have any other questions? Everybody good?
I have a question because it's like my takeaway, of course, is going to be to do this meeting, right? That's very important for me. To make it more effective, do I do it on a job site or maybe take him out for lunch?
Yeah, I always like to do breakfast before the day starts. Everybody is, they're fresh and it's fun. And so we would meet at Panera Bread and I'd say, hey guys, I want to buy you guys breakfast. Now we're not on the clock, so it's voluntary. You don't have to come, but I like to treat you to breakfast. And I did that for two reasons. Like I wanted to see who was really on the team because the guys that showed up were the great guys, were the good guys who cared about the company and cared about each other. The guys who just said, I'm not getting paid, I ain't coming. That was an obvious red flag that they probably weren't a good fit. So I did voluntary breakfast, but I said, I'm buying breakfast. Let's get together and chat. And so when you get together, make sure you always open up with big wins and get the conversation going positive and a productive conversation. And then you can lead into, hey, who wants to make more money? So I got some ideas about that. You guys want to hear it? And then you can go into how everybody can make more money. If breakfast doesn't work, lunch is fine. That is fine. Guys are more fresh. It's just a more fun meeting at breakfast when everybody's fresh rather than at lunch.
Okay. Sounds good. And to keep these meetings going on a weekly basis, if it's possible, Mondays, Fridays.
We would have company meetings, breakfast once a month.
Okay.
And we would try to schedule them, depending on the schedule, where everybody was scattered on the map, we would find something that's local. And we go in the middle of the week, like a Wednesday. You don't want to go on a Monday and you don't want to go on a Friday. Friday, they're thinking about Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. So usually in the middle of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays is good. And then we did it once a month at minimum.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Right on. All right. Let's close out with takeaways. Josh, lead the way, please.
I keep getting reminded that culture can really make or break a company. Having a good culture can create a really efficient team and experience, and yeah, it's definitely a big takeaway.
Awesome. Couple of quotes that come to mind: culture eats strategy for breakfast. Peter Drucker. Another one: culture, you get what you tolerate. That is in the book The Road Less Stupid, and I forget the name of the author at the top of my head, but it's chapter 7. I remember that. So yes sir, culture is everything. You get culture right, the company takes care of itself and you get your time back and you make serious profits. So right on. Okay. Ryan.
Yeah. Speaking of culture, it makes me think about culture and want to implement breakfast, you know, once or twice a month and getting their attention with, all right, who wants to make more money? And then everybody's in right there. Mm-hmm. And then it's a good grabber. And then just bringing it in serious and letting them know, okay, here's what's going to happen and we're all on the same team and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Right on. Thank you, Ryan. Alex?
Besides my normal of culture is king, I'm going to have to say we should always be asking ourselves, how can we add more value? No matter if we're selling, no matter what, how can we add more value to provide a better customer experience? Because that's what it's all about. That's what I guess more referrals, and that's the leads we want, our referrals. So.
Yes, sir. Right on. Fantastic. Thank you. And Alex Garcia, close us out through takeaways, please.
It's going to be just do it. Don't overthink it. Just do it and own it and just keep moving. That's find solutions to the situations that we're caused.
Awesome. Fantastic, Alex. Yeah. Thank you. That's gentlemen, I appreciate
slogan. I feel like that. I might use that. Stellar painting, just do it. I think I get in trouble for it.
Just to, I remember I was watching Jim Rohn Weekend Leadership 2004, and that's how I was introduced to Brian Tracy, who's one of my all-time favorites. But there was another one on there called Dennis. His name is Dennis Whately, and he gave this random presentation. He was jumping all around, and so I'm half listening, but I'm sitting there trying to, and out of nowhere he said, "You don't have all the facts, you never will." And I went, and so me being somebody who analyzes and thinks too much, that helped me for whatever reason, like it clicked. And so just doing it, let's get it, that little bit of coffee. All right. Thank you guys. I appreciate you guys. I want to encourage you to continue to dream big, also smarter. You've got this. Have a great day, guys.
PayNet podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and are made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.